Top of the morning to you, brethren and sisters. That's about as close as I ever get to speaking in tongues. So we come then to our third class, brethren and sisters, and it concerns the meeting at the well with Moses and Zipporah. But just going back to yesterday's lesson, many things had happened to the children of Israel since that miraculous conversion, which we looked at the end of yesterday's study of Jacob. From being the supplanter, the heel catcher, the one that only thought about himself, he now became God-mastered when God's will became his will. And he then took upon himself the name of Israel. He entered into the kingdom of God with a crippled leg rather than to enter into hellfire with two legs. And so we need to now bridge this gap of history. We have a bridge that we need to build from this time when Jacob entered into the land, right up to the time where we need to come to this third well. And we're going to do this with the help of Stephen and Acts chapter 7. To be sure, he was a different man altogether, Jacob. He left the land with nothing. And he returned a wealthy man with a large family. Between he and the four women of his life, he had produced the very foundations upon which the whole nation of Israel was to have been built. Among these living stones, he had two favorite sons, both born of his beloved wife Rachel. And they were Joseph and Benjamin. And later, his beloved son Joseph was sold into slavery. You're in Acts chapter 7, coming down to verse 9, we pick up the words of Stephen. And I'm taking it from the NIV. Because the patriarchs were jealous of Joseph, they sold him into slavery into Egypt. But because God was with him and rescued him from all his troubles, he gave Joseph wisdom and enabled him to gain the goodwill of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. So he made him ruler over the house of Egypt in his palace. Then a famine struck all Egypt and Canaan, bringing great suffering, and our fathers could not find food. When Jacob heard that there was grain in Egypt, he sent our fathers on a visit. On their second visit, Joseph told his brothers who he was, and Pharaoh learned about Joseph's family. After this, Joseph sent for his father, Jacob, and his whole family, 75 in all. Then Jacob went down to Egypt, where he and our fathers died. Their bodies were brought back to Shechem and placed in the tomb that Abraham had bought from the sons of Hamor at Shechem for a certain sum of money. Verse 17. As the time drew near for God to fulfill his promise to Abraham, the number of our people in Egypt greatly increased. Then another king, who knew nothing about Joseph, became a ruler in Egypt. He dealt treacherously with our people and oppressed our forefathers by forcing them to throw out their newborn babies so that they would die. At that time, Moses was born. He was no ordinary child. For 3 months he was cared for in his father's house. When he was placed outside, Pharaoh's daughter took him in and brought him up as her own son. Verse 22. Moses was educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was powerful in speech and action. And when Moses was 40 years old, he decided to visit his fellow Israelites. He saw one of them being ill-treated by an Egyptian. So he went to his defense and avenged him by killing the Egyptian. Moses thought that his own people would realize that God was using him to rescue them. But they did not. The next day, Moses came upon two Israelites who were fighting. He tried to reconcile them by saying, "Men, you are brothers. Why do you want to hurt each other?" But the man who was ill-treating the other pushed Moses aside and said, "Who made you a ruler and a judge over us? Do you want to kill me as you killed the Egyptian yesterday?" And when Moses heard this, he fled to Midian. I bring you now, brethren and sisters, to Exodus chapter 2. We have bridged a large portion of history from the time of Jacob to Moses as he fled to Midian. Again, the day is hot and blistering. Again, we see a lonely man on the run. Not this time from an angry brother, but this time from an angry Pharaoh. Like Jacob, Moses is hot. He's exhausted. He's on the run. He's probably traveled a couple of hundred miles right across the top of Sinai. Again, we are at a well. Again, we are at a well outside of the land of Israel. This time far south of Haran in the land of Midian. Now, for those who don't know your geography too well, if I put my fingers up like that and we take this gap as being the Sinai Peninsula and this being the Red Sea here and the other part of the Red Sea there, over here you will find Ezion Geba and over here you will find Goshen. He's traveled from Goshen right across the top of the Sinai to this point and probably down to approximately here. This is the Gulf of Arabia and this is the land of Midian. Moses is now sitting nearby a well. And lo and behold, not one beautiful woman, but seven in long flowing robes. And they approach Moses as he's sitting by this well. Was it a mirage? Was he just imagining things? Can you just imagine after that kind of journey to be sitting at a well and lo and behold, seven beautiful women approach? I would say in that kind of condition, this is paradise. But from their point of view, as they approach Moses, what do they see? They see this stranger, this Egyptian. I mean, he was, to all intents and purposes, an Egyptian. He looked like an Egyptian. He probably was very dirty, very dusty, forlorn, probably had that kind of lost look on his face. Where am I? Where am I going? And near this well, we've also got a group of people, a couple of layabouts, that are looking for trouble. Men that are layabouts normally are people looking for trouble. Now, like Rachel, the woman that had come to the well had come with a specific goal in mind. They had come to water the flock of their father. And so they too were shepherdesses. They were people that were used to looking after sheep. But the women weren't looking for trouble. They were about their daily business. But every time they came to the well, there were these layabout men that were causing grief. They were causing trouble. And we need, as children of light, to learn a lot about body language. When people are loitering, they've got nothing to do, and there's trouble. And that's basically what's happening at the well. These layabout shepherds, and they were causing these women a lot of heartache and a lot of grief. Now, we're not told in the record how many of these layabouts there were at the well, but however many there were, Moses sends them on their way packing. Another hero coming in on his big white stallion, saving the damsels in distress. And so we see verse 15, Exodus 2, verse 15, taken from the middle of the verse. "But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well." Now the priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came to draw water and filled their troughs to water their father's flock. And the shepherds came and drove them away. But Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. Now the NIV says that Moses got up and came to their rescue. There he is, the knight in shining armor. And I mentioned this yesterday and I'll mention it again. This whole issue of young boys always having this little fantasy of saving women. This whole issue of being able to be of assistance to women. Because men are very, very different in the company of women as they are in the company of men. Now obviously these layabout shepherds had caused a lot of trouble for these damsels so far. And that would explain why the girl's father was so surprised when they had managed to fulfill their task of watering the sheep so quickly. Look at verse 18. And when they came to Reuel, their father, that's Jethro, this is just another name for the same man, Jethro, their father, he said, "How is it that you have come so soon today?" And they said, "Well, an Egyptian delivered us out of the hands of the shepherds and also drew water enough for us and watered our flock." Notice the same kind of actions that we've already seen back at that well at Haran. He's quite a gentleman, our friend Moses here. A real gentleman. He's delivered them, and not only that, he's drawn water for them, and not only that, he's drawn water for the flock. After all, Moses had spent 40 years in the courts of Egypt. He was a gentleman through and through. And there were many things that he'd learned while he was there. Not only was he a gentleman, but he was also a man of courage. I mean, these layabouts, we don't know. There could have been 5, 10, 15. We don't know how many there were. But certainly there was more than one. There was more than he. And so he was a man of great courage to have sent them on their way packing. Now, from Jethro's point of view, this stranger that they had met at the well was a real catch. He, I mean, had 7 daughters. I've only got 3. And Jethro is quite eager that these girls have come back empty-handed. I mean, why did you leave the stranger at the well? Why didn't you bring him home? And so we see in verse 20. And I guess if I was Jethro, I would say this with a certain degree of urgency. Where is he? Why did you leave the man? Call him. Bring him in. Let's have a meal together. Let's get to know this fella. So it seems then from reading between the lines that obedient to their father's command, and then probably all 7 of them run out back to the well to go and see if this stranger, this man Moses, is still at the well. Maybe by the time they got back there, he'd moved on. Maybe there'd been a fight between him and the other layabout shepherds at the well. Maybe they'd come back for him. And probably these were the thoughts that were going through their minds as they went back to the well. What a relief to find that he was still there. Maybe Moses was sitting there kind of still in a kind of a daze, wondering whether all this has just been a dream. I mean, 7 women coming and then 7 women going. Maybe this has all just been a dream. Just a mirage. And so they plead with him to return home to meet Daddy. So Moses is overwhelmed by the invitation. He graciously accepts. I mean, you know, going home to meet Daddy, a hot meal tonight, 7 women, beats sleeping on the cold desert floor any day. So over a period of time, he is taken in by Jethro and his family. And there's a little romance that begins to develop between Moses and Zipporah. Now, we are not told whether Zipporah is the youngest, the middle, or the eldest. But we did find in yesterday's study that it was customary for the eldest one to be given in marriage first. And so we read in verse 21 that Moses was content to dwell with the man. And if it had been you and me, I guess we would also be very content to dwell there. And he gave Moses Zipporah his daughter. And so they get married. Now we need to understand that Zipporah is a Midianite. And the Midianites were basically Cushites. They were Ethiopians. They were as black as the ace of spades, as black as the tents of Midian. And this would explain why we have this drama that unfolds later on in the text when we come to Numbers chapter 12. You'll remember when Aaron and Miriam have this big altercation with Moses about the fact that he had taken a Cushite. He never took another wife. It's the same wife. But we'll develop that story a little later. Now, Zipporah ironically means sparrow. That's her name. A bird, but a sparrow. And perhaps her character was reflected in her name. Maybe she was flighting. Maybe she was free. Maybe she was swift. Maybe she was delicate. But just catch that little echo in the New Testament. Not one sparrow falls to the ground without your father knowing it. She's a survivor. Now she's a Midianitess. Now the word Midian means strife. Now I don't know whether she was a mixture of these two things, you know, flighting and free on the one hand as a sparrow and full of strife on the other, but certainly her tribe was full of strife. Midian was a place of strife. We'll remember well that it was the Midianites that were descended from Abraham through his second wife Keturah. So there were very important parts in Scripture where the Midianites played an important role. You remember that it was the Midianites that took Moses down into Egypt. And now at this period of time, it was the Midianites that looked after Moses for this period of his life. Remember that the life of Moses is carefully divided for us into three 40-year periods. The first 40-year period in Egypt. The second 40-year period in Midian. That's where he is now. And then that third 40-year period, taking the children of Israel, the sheep, through the desert and bringing them to the promised land. But sadly, towards the end of the Exodus journey, just before the death of Moses, the Midianites were the ones that were responsible for leading the Jews, leading the Israelites to worship Baal Peor, as a result of which God instructed Moses to avenge the children of Israel of the Midianites. And so there was that huge battle, and a lot of them were killed. But they began to multiply again, and if you follow them through the history of Israel again, they're there in the time of Gideon as a thorn in the side of the nation of Israel. So we pick it up now in verse 22, just focusing our minds on the relationship now. And so Zipporah bare him a son, and he called his name Gershom. And he said, I have been a stranger in a strange land. And that's what the word Gershom means a foreigner. It came to pass that the king of Egypt died, and the Israelites groaned in their slavery, and they cried out, and they cried for help because of their slavery. And so, verse 24, God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant. What a lovely theme that is. God remembered Noah. God remembered Rachel. And we pray that God will remember us. God remembered them because of the covenant that he had made with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Verse 25, and God looked upon the children of Israel, and God had respect unto them. And now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the backside of the desert, and he came to the mountain of God, even Horeb. Notice that there's been a change. It was originally Zipporah that was the shepherdess. Now Moses is the shepherd. He is the one that has been taught by his wife how to look after sheep. Now the next time we pick up Zipporah, it's about 40 years later. Sometime after Moses' encounter with the angel at the burning bush at Horeb. Because at the end of 40 years, God instructs Moses to go back to Egypt in order to deliver the children of Israel. So he now returns to Midian, and he asks his father-in-law for permission to go back and release his people, to release the Jews out of the land of Egypt. Think of that. What an incredible relationship that Moses had with Jethro, his father-in-law. That when God gives him this instruction, he goes back and asks permission. And here it is in chapter 4 and verse 18. Moses is about 80 years old at this stage. Exodus 4 and verse 18. And Moses went and returned to Jethro his father-in-law and said unto him, Let me go, I pray thee, and return unto my brethren which are in Egypt, and see whether they yet be alive. And Jethro says to Moses, Go in peace. And the Lord said unto Moses in Midian, Go, return unto Egypt, for all the men are dead which sought thy life. And so Moses sets off for Egypt with his wife and his two sons. In verse 20. Coming down to verse 21. The Lord said unto Moses, when thou goest to return to Egypt, see that thou do all those wonders before Pharaoh which I have put in thine hand. But I will harden his heart, that they shall not let the people go. But thou shalt say unto Pharaoh, notice the emphasis here, thus saith the Lord, Israel is my son, even my firstborn. Notice the emphasis on firstborn. And I say unto thee, let my people go, that he may serve me. And if thou refuse to let him go, behold, I will slay thy son, even thy firstborn. Notice the emphasis on the firstborn, because it is absolutely important and very, very important to understand the relationship of firstborn to what we are going to find in this very puzzling verse, verse 24. Because I believe that Moses had failed in at least two commandments. The first commandment was the commandment of the firstborn, and the second was that of circumcision. And you'll pick it up in verse 24. And it came to pass, by the way in the inn, that the Lord met him and sought to kill him. Then Zipporah took a sharp stone, and cut off the foreskin of his son, and cast it at his feet, and said, surely a bloody husband thou art unto me. So he let him go. Then she said, a bloody husband thou art, because of the circumcision. So there are a number of points to notice in these verses. The Lord was so angry with Moses that he wanted to kill him. And the question is obviously why. And Zipporah gives us the answer. And that is because of the circumcision. Now we need to remember that Moses was circumcised. He spent 3 months in the home of his mother and father. The first 3 months of his life, that's where he was. He was circumcised at 8 days. And when he was put finally into that little ark and sent down the river, when they opened it, he was crying and they said, this is a Hebrew child. How did they know he was a Hebrew child if he wasn't circumcised? So Moses was circumcised. And here we find Moses going back to redeem God's people who were to be God's firstborn. How could the firstborn, the nation of Israel, enter into the promised land without being circumcised? And his two sons would be two of those. And they weren't circumcised. And so with the help of the overhead projector here, we see here that the principle of the firstborn and the principle of circumcision are two laws which Moses had not fulfilled in his life. As the head of the family, Moses should have dedicated his firstborn to the God of Israel. We pick that up later on in the Exodus record at 13 verse 2. Consecrate to me every firstborn male. The first offspring of every womb of the Israelites belongs to me, whether man or animal. And when we take this into the New Testament, we see that this law was enacted in the New Testament by Mary. And when the days of Mary's purification according to the law of Moses were accomplished, they brought him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. As it is written in the law of the Lord, every male that openeth the womb shall be called holy unto the Lord. So New and Old Testaments alike, the dedication of the firstborn was absolutely vital to their understanding and their salvation. The second issue here is the whole issue of the circumcision of the firstborn. As head of the family again, Moses should have circumcised his firstborn. And he hadn't. And we'll pick it up in Genesis 17 and at verse 14. And the uncircumcised man-child whose flesh of his foreskin is not circumcised, that soul shall be cut off from his people. He hath broken my covenant. And on both these occasions, and both these accounts, Moses had failed. Now, maybe you could find an excuse for the fact that he was guilty of not dedicating his firstborn, because that's later on in the law. But certainly he was guilty of the circumcision, whichever way you look at it, because that law of circumcision is found way back in Genesis chapter 17. And so we see Zipporah She knew exactly what to do. And why? Because she'd been faithfully taught by her husband. 40 years they'd had together. She knew what to do. And not only that, you must remember that she'd been brought up well. She'd been brought up as a daughter of a priest. Even if he had been the priest of the Midianites, she had been brought up well. She had been brought up as a listener. She'd been brought up as one that would do. She was obedient to her father and then to her husband. She was a good student. And here was Moses with a divine instruction now to redeem his people out of Egypt. He was to redeem Israel as God's firstborn son. And yet he himself had failed to circumcise his firstborn son. He had failed to dedicate his firstborn son, to redeem his firstborn son. Is it any wonder that we read in verse 24 that the Lord met him and sought to kill him? Here was the lawgiver himself who had forgotten the weightier matters of the law. If any man provide not for his own, especially for his own house, he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. And that's not only talking about natural things, but spiritual things. And here Moses had failed. And so this gentle, sprightly sparrow of a woman, this woman that Moses had met at the well at Midian, saved the day. She had saved her husband from sure death. And in so doing, she had saved the nation of Israel. And so we read in verse 25 that his wife took a sharp stone and cut off the foreskin of her son and said, "Surely a bloody husband thou art unto me." Can you imagine her anger in having to do a job that her husband should have done? And he couldn't blame it on stress. He couldn't blame it. He'd had 40 years looking after sheep. There was no excuse about pressure, stress, lack of time. He had all the time in the world. And here we see Moses committing the sin of procrastination. I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow. Tomorrow's another day. And we put it off and put it off and put it off, and the job never gets done. And that's exactly what happened to Moses. Now the next time we find this remarkable woman, it is sometime later in the record, and it's Exodus 18. It's after the plagues, it's after the death of the firstborn in Egypt, it's after the first Passover, it's after the crossing of the Red Sea, and the children are on their way down to Mount Sinai. Now although the focus of this particular chapter is on the relationship between Moses and Jethro, we need to read between the lines. And we need to pick up the focus of our study. And that is the woman that Moses met at the well. Zipporah, this gentle, fleeting little sparrow. Verse 1 of Exodus 18. When Jethro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law, heard of all that God had done for Moses and for Israel his people, and that the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt, then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took Zipporah. Notice that Zipporah is with Jethro, Moses' wife, after he had sent her back. And I'm going to suggest to you that the "he" there is referring to Moses. That somewhere in the story, Moses had parted from Zipporah and sent her back. Now, a better translation here, verse 2, I'm going to take it from the NIV. It says that after Moses had sent away his wife Zipporah, his father-in-law Jethro received her and her two sons. So it seems then, reading between the lines, that Moses went into Egypt with Zipporah and the two sons. And at some point, Moses sent Zipporah and the two sons back to Jethro. Now, was it before they got to Egypt? Was it before or after the plagues? Was it before or after the Passover? We cannot tell. But somewhere in the story, Moses has sent Zipporah and the two boys back to Jethro. Perhaps Moses had to say goodbye to them before he could take on the responsibility of delivering the whole nation, probably 3 million people, out of the land of Egypt. Can you imagine the responsibility upon the shoulders of Moses as he had to deliver these people? And when they left, they didn't leave Egypt into a real comfortable zone, a kind of tropical island, lots of water, waterfalls, and lots of fruit and things, out into the wilderness, into a desert, with dust, and more dust. What kind of strain would this place upon the relationship, the marriage relationship between Moses and Zipporah? I mean, we know, as brethren that take responsibility within our own ecclesias, how difficult it is sometimes to balance the books. The responsibility of the ecclesia on one hand, and it's normally 10, 15, 20 people, and our wives. Moses is going to now bear the burdens of something like 3 million people. What kind of burden is that on a relationship? Now, whenever the parting took place, we should never underestimate the tenacity and spiritual strength of this woman. She was not only prepared to let her husband go, not over to a Bible school for, you know, a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. She was prepared to let her husband go to fulfill a greater purpose in the mind and act of God, the purpose of God. But also she had the strength of character to find her way back, wherever it was, right across the Sinai, back to Midian, back to Daddy, with the two boys. And for those of you who have ever had the great pleasure of traveling around Sinai, you know what that kind of trip would have been. Just a woman and two boys, by themselves. In the middle of verse 3, we are told that the one son's name is Gershom, for Moses said, I have become an alien in a foreign land. And the other name of the other son was Eliezer. For the God of my father said, was mine help, and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh. It's quite interesting that we're only given the second son's name now, and it's Eliezer. We've done a full circle again, haven't we? The first well that we looked at there was Eliezer with his camels. Eliezer of Damascus. And now we have a different Eliezer, the son of Moses. Isn't that interesting? Eliezer means helped of God. And maybe that is the reason why we only have the revelation of the son's name now. Why do you suppose we are given his name only now? Was it because God was to be their help in delivering them from Pharaoh? Do you think it was because God was to be their help in delivering them from Pharaoh the second time? God was to be their help in that he brought Zipporah and the son safely back from Jethro, whatever the reason, it is only this and in this third and final direct act of Zipporah, because she only occurs three times in Scripture, and this is the third time and the final time that we meet her, that Eliezer is mentioned by name. So verse 5, Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife unto Moses in the wilderness, where he encamped the Mount of God. And he said unto Moses, I, thy father-in-law Jethro, am come unto thee, and thy wife, and her two sons with her. So we can see that we're not misconstruing the texture. And Moses went out to meet his father-in-law, and did obeisance and kissed him, and they asked each other of their welfare, and they came to the tent. Notice here that the whole emphasis now has changed. Zipporah is not even part of the equation. Perhaps the marriage had broken down altogether. And now there's this relationship between Jethro and Moses, his father-in-law. He kissed him. He doesn't go and kiss Zipporah. He doesn't go and kiss his two boys. He kisses his father-in-law. And he pays obeisance to him. And they asked each other of their welfare. And there's no evidence in the record of any affection shown by Moses to Zipporah. And in fact, the rest of the chapter focuses on this relationship, Moses and Jethro. And so verse 8, and Moses told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done unto Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake, and all the travail that had come upon them by the way, and how the Lord had delivered them. And so this incredibly close relationship between Moses and Jethro is lifted up into heavenly places as they share a fellowship meal. And notice carefully, will you, brethren and sisters, that he is still the priest of Midian. Verse 12. And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took a burnt offering and sacrifices for God, and Aaron came and all the elders of Israel to eat bread with Moses' father-in-law before God. Now, I don't know what you make of that, but that's a problem passage for me. But again, in the text, there's nothing about Zipporah and the sons. All the way through this chapter, the focus is on Jethro and Moses, and how Jethro now gives Moses his first lesson in management, and that is delegation of duty. And all the way through this, again, nothing about Zipporah and the sons. Now, there is, however, just a hint of hope for this strong, tenacious, fleeting, God-fearing woman right at the end of this chapter, and it's found in verse 27. Let's read this carefully. Verse 27, and Moses let his father-in-law depart. This is right after this incredible lesson on management, right at the end of this very beautiful part of Scripture. Moses let his father-in-law depart, and he, singular, by himself, without Zipporah and the two boys, he went his way into his own land. Mark those words. So we are told that Jethro left alone. We can therefore safely presume that Zipporah and the two boys were left in the safe care of Moses. And so I believe that the story does have a happy ending. And here's my happy suggestion. In Egypt, Moses' marriage to Zipporah was overburdened and overshadowed by the responsibility which he was to bear when he led the children of Israel from slavery. The marriage was at breaking point. Moses then sends Zipporah and the two boys back to Daddy because he cannot deal with the two situations at the same time. When she gets home, she explains the problem to Dad, and they would have sat many nights around the fire discussing the relationship problem and the problem that she'd had with Moses and the responsibility that God had placed upon Moses' shoulder. Jethro, being a very organized individual, he's the priest of Midian, wants the relationship to work out. He's already got a plan in his mind. So when he goes out to meet Moses, he knows what Moses' problem is. He's taking the whole burden upon himself. Every single Tom, Dick, or Harry in the middle of the whole congregation of Israel could come to him with a problem. I don't know whether my hair's lying this way or that way. I can't find my toothbrush. I can't do this. Every little minuscule problem was laid upon Moses' shoulder. And so he had to be given this incredible lesson by this organized man, this priest of Midian. You must set captains over tens, over fifties, over hundreds. And you only deal with the major issues. And in so doing, he would be able to dedicate more time to his relationship with Zipporah. And so he leaves a happy father, knowing that he had an important part to play in the life of his precious daughter Zipporah and his two grandsons. This would also explain, by the way, later on in the record when we come to Numbers 12, why Moses, or rather why Aaron and Miriam get all upset again. Because they're no longer the center of attention. Zipporah is back in the family unit, and so are the two boys. And so verse 27 tells us that Moses let his father-in-law depart, and Jethro went his way into his land, and therefore left Moses, Zipporah, Gershom, and Eleazar to go their way into their land. And here is the wonder of it all, brethren and sisters. None of these events would have taken place without Jethro. And he was a Gentile.
Thank you once again, Brother Barry.